Ramble.
To be completely transparent with you, I am still at that stage in my life where if you tell me, hey, something's going to make you feel better or something's going to make your skin clear, I'll probably be like, give me the clear skin. But growing up is realizing that you can have both. And I have made it a habit to implement things in my life that let me have both. Did you know that your gut health really impacts your skin health? And not just skin, apparently your gut health can impact your immune system, your energy levels, even your mental health. That is why I've now added my favorite probiotic from Symbiotica to my morning routine. It sounds weird to say, but Symbiotica's health supplements are now part of my skincare routine almost. If you guys don't know, Symbiotica is a supplement company that only uses clean, premium ingredients in its formulas. No seed oils, no fillers, no additives, no natural flavors, and no artificial ingredients. Symbiotica also formulates all of their supplements for optimal absorption. For example, I love their vitamin C so much, which is also really good for your skin if you didn't know. Everybody loves it. I mean, it's probably the most popular vitamin C amongst all of my friends and family. We love Symbiotica. Their vitamin C is formulated with liposomal technology, which basically means the vitamin C is delivered to the part of your digestive tract where it can be optimally absorbed. And I just love throwing one in my bag on the go, especially when I'm traveling. Symbiotica makes it so easy to stick to a routine, not just because of their supplements being great and tasting great and making me feel great, but also because they get delivered monthly. That means I never have to worry about refilling my supplements or running out, and it's just so easy to pause a delivery or add a new supplement to my delivery. With Symbiotica, I've really noticed an improvement in my skin health, but also I feel like I have more energy and mental clarity. Symbiotica has countless high-quality supplements that you can choose from. Sleep supplements, cognitive supplements, anti-aging supplements. If you're not sure which supplements would be best for your specific needs, you can do a short quiz on Symbiotica's website, and they'll recommend what you could benefit from. This year is your year. Are you ready to feel the results? Head over to symbiotica.com and use code Rotten for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. That's symbiotica.com and use code Rotten.
Bada bing, bada boom. Have you ever imagined a serial killer taking a poo? I know that's really not the way that you want to hear a podcast when you like click on this video. Hi, if you're new here, you're like, let me just listen to this girl. What does she have to say? I'm like, hey, have you ever thought about Ted Bundy taking a big old poo-poo? So I used to do this head exercise where anytime I would get really creeped out about serial killers, like knowing that there's serial killers out there, like there are active serial killers out there, serial killers that we haven't even talked about on this podcast because they're out there killing people right now as I'm filming this. Sometimes I get all up in my head about it and I'm like, these people are real. These are not just people that we talk about. Like, these are real ass people. And then I just like have this moment, like this quarter life crisis, and then I'm like, okay, just think about them pooping. Just think about them pooping. And then suddenly it's not so scary anymore, because you know when a serial killer is pooping, how scary is it? You know, with their pants around their ankles, they're on a toilet, they all poop just like you and me. But then I got into some serial killers who really like poop play. So then I was like, well, that doesn't no longer work for me, because now I just imagine that serial killer making me eat their poo. And that's like even scarier than before, you know? And so I had to come up with a new brain exercise about the weird ways serial killers get caught in their crazy serial crimes. I mean, think about it. Like, these people, they're going around evading the police years at a time, some of them, right? Some of them have above average intelligence. We almost kind of, I wouldn't say we put them on a pedestal, but we make them seem like these mastermind villains. And then they get caught in the dumbest way. And you're just like, how are you so dumb? I mean, it's gotten to the point where psychologists literally believe that towards the end of active serial killers' killings, a lot of them want to be caught. That's why they do some dumb shit. And I'm like, or maybe they're just dumb. I don't know. So to give you a couple of examples. So today we're talking about a very infamous serial killer in the United Kingdom by the name of Dennis Nilsen. And he was a crazy necrophiliac, a pedophile, and just like a serial killer who boiled people. I mean, it gets really intense. A lot of people in the United States call him the British Jeffrey Dahmer. There's a lot of pickles to pick about that one, because they were actually active at the same time. So the year that Jeffrey Dahmer started killing, Dennis Nilsen started killing in the UK. And it's kind of weird because he's not even British. He's actually from Scotland, but he was active in London. So there's a lot of pickles to pick about that one. And I also saw a Reddit thread about how people were complaining about how everyone in America thinks everything's from America. They're like, why can't it be the American Jeffrey Dahmer? Like the American Dennis Nilsen. Why does it have to be the British Jeffrey Dahmer?
Yeah, yeah.
So exactly. It's a little weird, especially because Dennis Nilsen was caught
prior to Jeffrey Dahmer being caught. So all sorts of strange. But let's talk about BTK real quick. So if you guys don't know, BTK was an infamous serial killer in the United States. His name is Dennis Radar, but he was called BTK because he would bind his victims, then he would continue to torture them, then he would eventually kill them. And he was, I mean, he was just straight up evil. I mean, he looks like a hamburger, but he was evil. And it's just crazy because he had like a whole loving family behind the scenes, and he was just going out. He worked for a security company. That's how he was able to get into people's homes, and he would just kill them. Now, he really loved media attention. Like, he loved getting that ego stroked. He was like, yes, baby, harder. And he one time asked the police, hey, listen, police, I've got a quick question for you. Now, be honest. He even told the police, be honest with me, okay? I know you're trying to catch me because I'm killing people, but be honest, if I communicate with you via floppy disk, can it be traced back to my computer? What's the answer to that?
Of course not, you know?
Yeah, the police were like, absolutely not. We don't even know what a floppy disk is. Wow, you're so technologically advanced. So the police put out an ad and they say, no, we can't trace you. So then Dennis sends them a freaking floppy disk. It gets traced back to his church. Yeah, by the way, did I mention he was like a family man going to church and stuff? His computer broke at home, so he went to the church to work on that floppy disk. And they caught Dennis Radar. Because he asked about a floppy disk. And when the police arrested him, he was so shocked. He asked the police, how come you lied to me? How come you lied to me? And the police were just so confused
at the audacity.
The audacity that this man had. Richard Ramirez, otherwise known as the Night Stalker in Los Angeles, he murdered people. He entered homes and he murdered people. Now, the day that he got caught, he tried to carjack a woman. And the car ended up being like in neutral or something. So it rolled down and hit like a building. So he wasn't able to carjack that woman. Then he tries to carjack a different woman. Now, at this point, they started alerting the police, and the woman's neighbor comes out while she's fighting back. Richard Ramirez punches her in the stomach, gets into her car, and the neighbor was like, I don't think so. So he opens up the car door, pulled Richard Ramirez out, and was like, hey, get my two sons. I need them to help me restrain him, because Richard Ramirez's photo has been like out there for some time now. So all of these neighborhood ajumas, which means like old ladies, like I'm talking housewives, I'm talking grandmamas, like they all came out and they called the police and they started beating Richard Ramirez to a pulp. Like, they just fucking, I don't know, they jumped the dude. They jumped a serial killer. They jumped Richard Ramirez until the police came. Like, he was all beat up and battered for his mugshot. Does that really sound like the Night Stalker to you? Like, getting beat up by some neighborhood ajumas? Like, really? Also, I just found out that in Russian, babushka means ajuma. I had no idea. So, like, imagine a bunch of, like, babushkas and ajumas. They come out and they just freaking beat up a serial killer. I find that to be absolutely insane. Now, this one is going to be really, really odd. So, this all takes place, like I said, in London. And there was a house in London that was split into six different flats. So, I mean, I guess I would call it...
Are you talking about...
We're going into Dennis Nilsson. Sorry, there was no...
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay, are you ready? Because this one, it's got to do with drains. Yeah. There was a house in London, right? And there's six units inside of this building. And there's, I believe, multiple different landlords. And they just rent out the units. I don't think... It's you get it. It's like an apartment building, but looks like a house. And they were having a massive plumbing situation. All of the residents were complaining about blocked drains. They were like, listen, I can't even... Like, my sink is clogging up. My toilet's not flushing. I don't know what's going on. So the landlord eventually calls the plumber, and the plumber goes into the pipes of one of the units and he successfully unclogs it, and he's like, well, you're good to go. Now the plumber did mention to the landlord after, like, thanks for the payment, but man, that was one of the worst, stinkiest shit I've ever smelled. Like, I don't know what that tenant is doing. I don't know what these tenants in this entire building's doing, but that was the stinkiest drain I have ever unclogged. So you might, you know, be interested in looking at like a really intense plumber, because it seems like there's a deeper lying issue. Maybe you got some sewage pipes that are coming in. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just not good news, lady, right? And so they're like, okay, well, thank you. Now, quickly, that same flat started having drainage issues again. So then the landlord is like, oh my gosh, okay, I'm gonna call in a heavy duty plumber instead of like a maintenance man. I'm gonna call in like a crazy plumbing company, and they're gonna go look in the pipes underneath the house, like not just like a little Drano down the sink situation. Yeah. So the heavy duty plumbers come in, and they came in around like dawn, like nighttime. Is dawn nighttime?
Dawn's not nighttime.
Dawn is the sun. Dusk. They came at around dusk, okay? So, like, doing nightfall, like, sunset time, golden hour. I'm more familiar with these terms. The plumbers come in, and they take a look inside of underneath the house at the pipes. And when they open up a particular drainage vent, they start seeing some shit. And one of the plumbers is like, hey, you want to come over here? Because I see some weird stuff. And he's like, does that not look like butcher's prepared meat with like a bunch of bones mixed in? Like it looked like straight up flesh, which is an odd thing to have in the pipes. Like you would think maybe poo. You would think maybe some condoms, maybe some feminine products that shouldn't have been flesh. But like flesh, like who is going around flushing their chicken breasts like down the toilet? That doesn't make any sense. Uh-huh. And so his friend is like, oh, yeah, maybe we should call our boss about it because this is really suspicious. So they call the boss and the boss says, listen, I think at this point it's a little bit too dark. Why don't you leave that there and we will come back in the morning and take a look at it because I'm sure it's nothing. Like I'm sure nobody is putting human meat down the drains, guys. It's probably some chicken breast or something. So they're like, okay, sounds good. Now at this point, all of the tenants had come downstairs and they were kind of investigating because they're like, you know what? I have been having drainage issues. So what the fork's going on? You better tell me who's flushing condoms, who's flushing paper towels, you know, mm-hmm. Who should we talk to? And that's when they're like, I don't know, something weird's there. It looks like flesh or something, but we'll be back in the morning, guys. Don't you worry about it. Mm-hmm. So they go home, they sleep for the night. The next morning, the plumbers come back and all of the meat and the bones had disappeared. Mm. So they had set it aside so that it couldn't have been washed back down into the pipes. That doesn't make any sense. You know, did like a wild animal come and like get these? They just started getting really suspicious. So they start investigating through the rest of the pipes and the drains and they don't really find anything until they check a pipe that was on the side of the house. Uh-huh. So it's no longer under the house, but on the side. This becomes very pertinent, like running down the side. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, like it hasn't hit the ground yet.
Yeah, running down the side.
That means it's only from the above units.
Oh, God, look at you, detective. Uh-huh. Oh, shoot. Well, you know. Daddy, chill. And so they look at that pipe. They stick their hand in there because that one feels really jammed, too. And that's when they pull out a giant hunk of flesh and they call 911. They're like, dude, that's for sure human flesh. So the police get a call that a drain in the regular suburbs, like not even a bad area, they're like, I think we got some human flesh in this drain. So the police, I don't even know if they were taking it that seriously in the beginning. So they show up to a place called Muswell Hill and they find out that it was blocked with human remains. So they send this evidence, which is pieces of flesh, a little bit of bones, what looked like knuckles from a human hand, and they sent it to the local hospital for a pathologist to determine, is this a human? Uh-huh. So the pathologist immediately calls the police back and is like, whoa, first of all, it's human remains. Second of all, it's a homicide. Third of all, the victim's been strangled. And the police are like, all right.
How did they find out
yeah,
that?
Yeah, exactly. The police are like, you've been watching too much CSI. Like, okay, fine. You just need to say that it's human remains. What do you mean it's a homicide? The victim's been strangled. Like, I gave you not even a pound of meat. You know what I mean? Like, you need to tone down your tits. And they said, well, ironically enough, the little piece of flesh that you had brought us is a piece of the neck. And there's a clear ligature mark, which means that this person, like, nobody's just walking around with ligature marks on their neck at all times. Like, it's very rare. It's usually only a homicide. And the fact that they were in a drain, I mean, this person's probably been killed. Mm-hmm. So the police are like, holy shit. Now they start to realize because the flesh came from the side pipe of the house, uh-huh. Only the middle level and the top floor would have used this pipe. Yeah. So if you were on the ground level and you flush something or you use the sink, it would have just gone straight into a different pipage situation. Yeah. And so this one, they're like, oh my God, we need to talk to these people. We need to talk to every single tenant on the middle floor, every single tenant on the top floor.
There's now, only a couple of them, no?
Yeah. Now when they talk to the landlords, they realize that the middle floor has been vacant for quite some time. And there's only one tenant on the top floor currently in the attic unit. And his name is Dennis freaking Nelson. Dude has no criminal record. He has no police have any real crazy reason to suspect him of, you know, dumping human remains into the toilet. Mm-hmm. But they were like, okay, well, let's go investigate him, right? So Dennis Nelson, at the time, he was 37 years old, an executive officer at a local job center. So he essentially just helps people get jobs, right? Uh-huh. And he just lived on the top floor. So the police come to try to question Dennis, and he was at work at the time, and he wouldn't be back home until 5-ish. So they're like, okay, well, let's just wait outside. So they start talking to some of the ground floor residents and they're like, you know, we just want to talk to Dennis. Yeah, there were human remains in the drain. And one of the neighbors is like, oh my God,
this morning, like before the plumbers came, right? Mm-hmm. I saw Dennis out and about really early, and he's never out and about. And he was just red in the face. He was sweating, looked like he had just run a marathon. And, you know, he's not that active of a guy. And I saw that his arms were really dirty, like up to shoulder length. Like he had just stuck his arms into like a vat of mud or something. It was just really odd. But yeah, no, I saw that. So the police are like, okay, obviously he's hiding something. So finally, when Dennis comes home, they let him know that they're investigating the blocked drains. And Dennis is so casual. He just like giggles. He's like, since when are police interested in blocked drains?
Okay.
And they're like, well, we can tell you all about it if you let us inside. So he's like, yeah, for sure. Come on in. Now, when the police walk into that apartment, immediately, you already know, they get that scent. They get that smell. It just penetrates their nostrils. And they're like, this is, oh God. They even said something along the lines of the atmosphere just feeling full on evil. Mm-hmm. So the police let him know, yeah, we're just investigating because we found, dun, 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 human remains inside the pipes inside this house drainage system. And he's like, oh my goodness, how awful, poor human. I wonder what happened to them.
Poor human.
And that's when the police are like, listen, Dennis, I'm not playing around. Just answer the question. Where's the rest of the body?
Oh, they went straight in.
They were like, we know it's you. Like, there's no, you know, who else could it be? And he just straight up is like, yeah. Okay, so if you go inside the closet in the other room, there's like two trash bags. You got me. Fair enough, dude.
Yeah. Just like that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was just like, fair enough. Go inside the closet, get two bags. So they go inside the closet. He had to give them keys to the wardrobe. So they open up the wardrobe and they find these two trash bags. They didn't even look inside. They knew from the smell that was coming off. They were like, arrest the motherforker. So they arrest him. They put him into the police car, and it was multiple police officers. So one of them is driving. One of them is sitting in the back with Dennis Nilsson. And in the car on the way to the police station, the guy in the back sitting with Dennis, by the way, Dennis Nilsson was not handcuffed. They weren't expecting to arrest anyone today, so I don't know if they don't carry around handcuffs back in the day or in the UK. I don't know, maybe they're much more civilized over there, but they just like did not carry handcuffs. So he was just sitting in the police car. I mean, obviously the police car was inescapable. It's not like he could just walk out of there, but he wasn't handcuffed. That's when the police officer, who was staring at the bags of evidence in the trunk of the car, looks at him and goes, huh. So he said that the bags look too big for each one to just be one human being per bag. Like, they were so full. So if you had dismembered someone, like that's too much meat. You know, that's so much meat. Like, I don't understand. So he looks at Dennis and he says, so how many bodies are we talking? Like, one, two? And Dennis looks at him and just goes, 15, I think maybe 16. And the police officer who was driving almost crashed the car at that moment because they did not know they had a serial killer on their hands. They genuinely thought that this was like a crime of passion, a one-off, a person killed another person for whatever freaking reason. Maybe it was a money motive. Maybe it was a crime of passion, a love motive, and then flush them down the toilet. But they were not expecting to catch a serial killer today. Like, that wasn't even on the menu. Like, that wasn't even an option. They weren't even really actively looking for a serial killer at the time. So they almost crashed the car. They're like, what the heck? This guy who is an alleged serial killer is not restrained. He's not handcuffed. So the rest of the ride, the police officer in the back just like held onto his arms and was like, I am your handcuffs. And they get him into the
police
station.
Held on his own arms because he's scared.
To get No. Yeah, so he just held onto Dennis's arms until he got to the police station. So who the fork is Dennis Nilsson? Let's get into his life. So Dennis Nilsson was born in November 23rd of 1945. Actually, the same day that my sister's fiance was born, so that's cool. Yeah, I verified.
Not the same year.
He was born in 1945 and my sister's fiance was 1940. I'm kidding, okay. And so he was born to a mom by the name of Elizabeth Duthie White, and his dad's name was Olav Magnus Moksheim. I'm sorry, he is Norwegian, so I don't know how to pronounce his name. I'm butchered that completely. So he's the second of three children. He was born in Scotland, and his dad was a Norwegian who fought for the Free Norwegian Forces. So he's like part of the Norwegian army. And at the time, he had traveled to Scotland to do work work with the Free Forces. And that's when he meets Elizabeth, who's a Scottish woman, and they get married. Like, they literally met like weeks ago, and they're just like, let's get married. They get married, and he really didn't care about Elizabeth at all. He didn't try to buy a house in Scotland for him to come back to, so Elizabeth just stayed with her own parents raising these children. He would briefly come once in a while and just spend time with them, with like, and I mean spend time as in he would just like have sex with Elizabeth. Like, he didn't really care to get to know the kids. He didn't really care to get to know Elizabeth even. He just really wanted to just like come by Scotland and have some sex and leave, which seems like a really expensive way to do things, but I don't know. Okay. And so every time he would visit once in a while, that's how all three of the kids were conceived. So it wasn't because he was around. It wasn't because he was like home, you know, or like visited once in a while. It was just very, very briefly. He would stop by. They would conceive another child. He would dip. And eventually, obviously, this wasn't going to work, right? So they got a divorce, and both parties just felt like they had rushed into things. So Dennis really grew up never knowing his dad at all. Now, his childhood was very interesting because he was a loner, but he was obsessed with his grandpa. So his mom was kind of obsessive over his siblings. So his older brother and his younger sister, the mom was like obsessed with them, very doting with them, just patient. And then with Dennis, she wasn't particularly abusive. She just didn't really care for him, didn't think that he was that special or entertaining or really anything. So his grandpa was his BFF. Now, his grandpa was a fisherman. So any time that he had to go away for work, it'd be like weeks or months at a time. Like, it's a lengthy job process. So Dennis said that during these times, life would be completely empty until he returned. Now, when Dennis turned 6, his great hero, his protector, that's what he called his grandpa, dies. But not in like the just regular traumatic way. So Dennis comes home one day, right? And his mom's crying. So he's like, hey, mom, like, what's wrong? Why are you crying? And she's all like, well, do you want to see your grandpa? Sure. Oh, okay. Where's grandpa? He's in the kitchen. And he prances into the kitchen because he's so excited to see grandpa. He didn't think grandpa would be home. And he goes, and there's just an open coffin on the kitchen table. And it's grandpa. Like, that's how he found out grandpa was dead. Like, his mom did not even tell him, like, listen, I know you were close with your grandpa. I know you love your grandpa. She was just like, you want to see grandpa? Go in the kitchen. Like, he had no idea that his grandpa had died until he saw grandpa laying dead in a box. So he's like, what? Yeah, his grandpa died. But you know what's not dead? Love. Okay, sorry. Love is in the air, and other things are also in the air. So with Valentine's Day coming around, maybe you don't want to go visit your parents or your grandparents that you love, or maybe that significant other that lives across town. Maybe you're like, listen, so much is in the air right now. I don't think that I should make this trip, but I want to send you something that's customized, that's perfect, that really symbolizes you and me. Like, maybe not just that, maybe you're the type of person that has a hard time expressing feelings to say out loud, and you want to send someone, hey, I care about you and I really love you. Love book is exactly what you're looking for. Ever thought about the idea, hey, our love story could be a freaking book? I mean, a very short book, but like, I could write a book. Well, Love Book makes it so easy. I think it's really just like the perfect gift for someone who has everything, or maybe someone who just needs a little bit of love. You can revisit your fondest memories, list the reasons why you love someone, and you can customize your book. There are characters that you can create to look just like yourself, just like the recipient, and you can use all of their features to make them look unique. You can choose their hairstyles, their outfits, and then you can make them the main character of the book. It's for the lazy, but it's also for the people who really want to customize every single page. So you have the option to personalize each page as much as you like, or you can use the express option and create a complete book in just a few minutes. You got a lot of boyfriends? This is the one for you, okay? You're like, boom, 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 done. They are perfect for any occasion, but especially for anniversaries, birthdays, and of course, Valentine's Day that is just around the corner. So make sure to visit lovebookonline.com/rotten to receive a special 20% discount only for you guys. Again, that's lovebookonline.com/rotten. So after he just like cries in the kitchen because he's like, excuse me, I was expecting to see my grandpa like making a toast. I don't know, sitting here reading a book, and now he is just dead in a coffin. Like, what is wrong with you, mother? I am 6 years old. So his mom tries to calm him down, sort of, and she's just like, well, grandpa's in a better place now. I mean, I get it. Like, this was her dad too, so maybe she was super emotional, but really not a good way to introduce death to your 6-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, grandpa's in a better place now, but she never really elaborated. So Dennis said that he at first felt really really, really upset with the fact that if grandpa is in a better place now, why the fork did he not take me? Like, why didn't he take me with him? Like, is it an expensive trip or something? Like, what's going on? He just felt really depressed and like he felt abandoned. Now, he would start going on walks after his grandpa passed on all of the places that his grandpa used to take him. He became really reserved. If anyone tried to show him any sort of affection, like if an uncle or an aunt tried to give him a hug, he would just completely reject it. He would just flat out would not know how to react, just really, really uncomfortable. Now, mm-hmm. He had a very tricky relationship with his grandma and his mom because he resented them. He felt like they gave an unfair amount of attention to his other siblings. He just felt like they're your favorites. Like, you don't even care about me. The only person who cared about me was grandpa. And that caused him later to kind of resent his own siblings as well. I mean, he does later on get a little too creepy close with his younger sister. I'll get into that. But yeah, so far he's just like resenting them. So what he would do is, because like I said, his grandpa had died. I didn't say this actually. His grandpa had died while at sea during his work. They retrieved his body and brought him back. So he was a fisherman. So he was always at sea. So what he would do is little Dennis would go to the water. He would walk into the water and simulate drowning. So he would still be tall enough to stand, but he would dunk his head underwater and just like pretend to drown. And he would consistently do this. Now, one day when he's 10 years
old. Why does he do that?
He said he felt so close to grandpa.
Oh.
So like that was the only way he could feel close to grandpa. So at 10 years old, he goes out into sea. He simulates drowning. Now, at this point, he had gotten in a little bit too deep where he was like barely able to stand and keep his head above water. And while he's simulating drowning, like dunking his head underwater, it started pushing him out further. So the tide pushed him out further and he actually began to drown. And he would have completely drowned to death if it weren't for someone who came to save him. So when he experienced this, he believed that his grandpa had pulled him out and he started feeling like this tranquil feeling. Like he was like, "Ooh, this is tranquility. Like I'm with my grandpa again." But in reality, another boy saw him flailing around, dragged him out of the water. And now the boy sees Dennis just kind of like limp on the shore. Like he had carried him out of the water. He is breathing. He is alive, but he's just kind of like knocked unconscious. And that is at this point, the boy decides to masturbate onto Dennis. Just like look at him and I guess masturbate onto him.
Serious?
Yeah, so this is really odd, but you'll see this all kind of like, we'll do like a full circle moment, but like not in a good way. Yeah, it's like a whole full circle moment.
But then
moment.
How does he know this happened?
Apparently maybe he was like in and out of consciousness, but like he woke up and there was a lot of white sticky residue all over him and stuff. And so
and he was still six?
He was 10 at this point. Yeah, yeah. And so his early teenagers after this moment, I mean, I would say that he was probably really traumatized. He claims that he wasn't, but like, I'm sure that's incredibly traumatizing when you're 10. You just haven't really categorized it as trauma. So his early teenage years, he was really just confused about his sexuality. He felt like he was attracted to men, but at the same time, back in the day, it wasn't widely accepted. So he tried to suppress it and suppress it and suppress it, but he also didn't ever want to be labeled. So later when the police arrest him and they start asking him questions, he would say things like, you know, for record's sake, you can call me a homosexual. For record's sake. But it seemed like he didn't necessarily define himself like in one particular group or another. He was just like, I don't know, I was just pretty confused most of the time. So when he's a teenager, he didn't really have any serial killer tendencies. So he wasn't really violent towards people, not towards animals. He didn't do any bedwetting. I mean, there seemed to be a little bit of sexual abuse. And when I say a little bit, I'm talking about the boy who masturbated on him when he was brought ashore. But then also he said that an older teenage boy one time just like molested him and was like touching him. I don't think there was any like penetration that happened, but there was a lot of just like molesting, like he was touching him. But he said that it wasn't unpleasant. Like that's what he said about it. So again, I feel like it's traumatic. I just don't think that he maybe categorized it as traumatic. Maybe his brain felt better being like, no, it was fine, it's okay, it's chill. So I think there was a little bit of sexual abuse for sure. Now he also wasn't necessarily bullied, so that's where it gets confusing. So he wasn't like bullied and ostracized to the brink of being crazy. Like some kids were like, oh, I think he's gay, and they would kind of make fun of him, but not really to the open either. So for most things that I read, it seems that a lot of people talked behind his back, but never straight to his face. So he wasn't like getting beat up at school or anything of that sort. Now, one day he volunteers to search for a missing man in the local area. Him and his friends are like, hey, this guy went missing. Let's go help look for him. So they joined a search party and they found his corpse. He had drowned at night and he had washed ashore. And he said that this was his second time seeing a dead person and it was just so strange. So then his mom gets remarried to a man by the name of Andrew Scott, who becomes his stepdad. And they all move in with Andrew Scott. And his mom ends up having 4 more children with Andrew. So now we've got 7 kids total, which is a lot. And Dennis initially hated Andrew. He said that he was unfair and just like really mean, too disciplinarian. But then he slowly started to respect him. So I don't know if that means anything. And this is around the time that Dennis becomes close to his sister, his younger sister by the name of Sylvia. They would talk to each other. They would play games with each other, which is a lot more than what Dennis did with his other siblings, his stepdad, his grandma, like his mom. Like, he was the closest with his younger sister, Sylvia. Now, what became alarming is that one day he's thinking about it. He's like, listen, I hate the fact that I'm into boys. Like, I wish I wasn't into boys. I think it's annoying. I wish I was just into girls. But for some reason, I'm not that into girls. And he's thinking about it, like, why am I into boys? Like, why are all these other boys at my school not into other boys, but I'm into boys? And he realizes that all of the boys that he was physically attracted to had similar facial features as his younger sister. Like, they either had like the same colored eyes, like the same nose structure. And he was like, oh my God, I know why. It's because I like boys just because I love Sylvia as a younger sister. And so maybe that sort of love got a little miscommunicated in my brain. And now I love boys who look like Sylvia. And so he thought that the cure to all of this was to sexually molest Sylvia. So he started touching her and groping her. Again, there was no rape, but it was, I mean, he sexually fondled her. Okay, straight up, like, he molested her, his own younger sister, because he felt like if he touched her, get it out of the way, it would get rid of the feeling. But it didn't.
What?
Yeah, he was obviously still attracted to boys afterwards. So he never attempted any relationship or sexual experiences during middle school, high school, just like during most of his teenage years. He was attracted to a lot of guys. He never acted on it. And that's around the time when I said he was, you know, molested by an older teenage boy, and he described the experience as not unpleasant. So at 15, Dennis is like, what am I going to do with my life? He's already having like a midlife crisis at 15 years old, right? And he just didn't get along with his family. So he's like, I want to get out of here. I want to do something different. So he decides to join the army. Now, when you're 15 years old, you have to take a series of tests to confirm that you're capable of joining the army. Like, are you intellectually capable? Are you emotionally capable? Like, we got to make sure that you're not going to do some dumb shit when you're 15. And so they find out that during these series of tests that he's above average intelligence, and he excelled in things like history. And so in the army, he wanted to be trained to become a chef. He just really loved cooking. He learned how to butcher animals, which kind of comes in handy later. Oh yeah. So he excelled in the army. He said it, during the first 3 years, it was like the happiest time of his life. Like, he was fitting in. He loved that he could travel to different areas, you know, taking different training courses and different bases. Like, he could just move around. He was mobile. Now, he would go on a very strict shower schedule, where he was scared of showering with other army colleagues because he might get an erection, a little bonbon, because, you know, he was attracted to men. So if he saw these men butt naked, he'd get a little boner, which is completely fine. But he did not want to get exposed for being gay, right, or bisexual. So he would shower alone, and he would often masturbate in the shower. Now, I feel like in hindsight, a lot of people made this out to be like, oh my God, you know, because he's a serial killer, right? But this feels pretty normal. This feels like every college dude going to the shower alone to masturbate instead of in front of all your dorm roommates. Like, it just seemed like an okay thing to do. And so eventually he gets stationed in West Germany. And oh my God, you know what I need to look up? Jeffrey Dahmer was also stationed in West Germany. I don't know why I needed to look that up. I was like, this feels a lot like Jeffrey Dahmer. Or, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer feels a lot like Dennis Nilsson. Sorry. Don't get offended. Okay. So anyways, in West Germany, he started drinking a lot. And one time him and this German youth, they get drunk. They get so drunk that they both pass out together. And he woke up first and he looks over. He sees this German dude just like knocked out. And he's like, whoa, I like this. Like, I like the idea that this German dude is just laying there unconscious, probably not going to wake up even if I shake him, even if I rattle him, even if I step on him. Like, he'll just be asleep. He's knocked out cold. I like that. And so from then on, anytime him and his army mates would get drunk, he would pretend to be unconscious. Like, he would literally have one sip of beer and then be like, guys, I'm so wasted. And then he would knock out in their room because he's, you know, too unconscious to walk back to his room. Mm-hmm. So he would knock out on their bed and hope that one of them would sexually molest his unconscious body.
Oh, he, oh, wow.
So he likes the idea of seeing other people unconscious, but also hopes that someone would touch him while he's quote unquote unconscious.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So during this time, he also was obsessed with photography in the army. So he started taking a lot of pictures. Now, were they just any pictures of him and his army mates, like in their little camo gear, you know, eating some MREs and shit? No. He would take pictures of fellow army people and he'd be like, listen, I'm the photographer, so I'm going to direct this photo shoot. So I want you guys to lay on the ground and pretend that you just got shot. Which, first of all, seems like a really alarming thing to do and probably forks with a lot of people's PTSD. But like, whatever, Dennis, okay? So they would all be like, that's really creepy, but okay, he's gonna keep bothering us unless we all lay on the ground and pretend that we're unconscious or dead because we've just been shot. So they would all lay there on the ground. He would take these pictures, he would go get them developed, and then he would put them up on his walls in his dorms. And he would kind of play it off as like, oh, like we're all just friends and I put these pictures up of us because we're friends. But a lot of people thought it was weird. Like the people in the pictures were like, this dude's weird, you know.
So why does he do that?
He likes the look of unconscious people.
Like, is that something that turns him on?
Oh, yeah. He loves, like, dead things. He'd even put on makeup later on to make himself look dead and would stare at himself in the mirror.
Oh, wow. So this is, like, almost like people do to put, like, those models on their wall type of deal.
Yeah.
Like, just, oh, they're attracted to it, right?
And he's, like, attracted to dead people. Yeah, he was like a weird necrophiliac.
Does that start again? So he saw the grandpa first.
So a lot of people think that it fused when he saw his grandpa who was dead, because his grandpa was the only person that he loved. And now he was getting really confused between love and people who are dead.
Got it.
You know?
Okay.
So like that's where he was like, okay, so should everyone I love be dead? Or like, does someone I love, are they dead? Like he was just getting real confused and twisted. Mm-hmm. And he would even go drown himself to try to feel closer to his grandpa. So he had a really weird relationship with death.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I don't know though, because also, you know, my grandpa died when I was pretty young. And I was really close with him. And I know so many people's grandparents died really young. Yeah. I wonder what it takes to get to this point.
Right.
Because I feel like every kid struggles with the concept of death. But like, what happened here where it turned into like, oh God, now I get turned on by death? Is it something? I don't know. It's just food for thought.
It sounds like for you, it sounds like one start has to do with he's pretending that he's not conscious. You know, even him asking his mates to pretend to be dead, that's another step of, hey, I kind of like this unconsciousness or this pretend death. And then later on, it proceeds to real death, right?
Yeah. There was actually a YouTube channel that got banned, or I don't know if they got banned or deleted, but it's like a whole genre where people like messing just with unconscious people. Now, obviously, we've talked about it, how people like dead people because they're unconscious. They can't say no. They can't fight back. And they just like the idea that someone's dead and then you're like fucking them. Crazy. Okay. That's necrophilia, right? But there's a group of people who, it's called, I believe, eye checking, where when someone is so knocked out, people get sexually turned on by like opening up their eyelid and seeing them being knocked out and not waking up.
What?
Yeah, and it's like an area where people will pay money to see that.
What is that?
Obviously,
is that a kink?
Illegal. Yeah.
It's a kink?
Yeah, and it's illegal unless, I mean, maybe she signed a consent form before she knocked out.
Wait, so if you're falling asleep, you fell asleep and I open your eyelids, what does that mean?
I mean,
is that illegal?
I think it should be illegal because if you're like sending them around the internet without my knowledge.
Oh, okay. So that's like you are getting sexual gratification without consent, right?
Yeah. Is that what like the line you're, is? Yeah. And then you're also recording it. I mean, I don't know where the legal line is, but I'm sure it's really blurry and you've got to get arrested for that. Oh. Yeah. And so there was like this YouTube channel of a guy who was posting his friends knocked out and he would eye check them, like meaning flipping open their eyelids, and they would be like wasted drunk. And so they passed out. So obviously it like looks like they're passed out when he lifts their eyelids. And a bunch of people are leaving in the comments like, I love your content, dude.
What?
Yeah. And so if you look deep into it, there's something called eye checking where people like to see videos of unconscious women getting eye checked, just like their eyelids being lifted to show that they're crazy unconscious.
That sounds more like drug than anything.
Yeah, it's just a crazy weird little, I feel like everything's kinky these days. I'm so yeah. Like these days I feel like I could go into a grocery store, fart, and then someone be like, that's kinky, I like it, and I'll be like, what? I just feel
feel like everything could get kinky. And so that's when he starts going out with his army mates. And of course, at this base, a lot of people started messing along with prostitutes. So all of his army mates, they'd be like, let's go out. Let's get some prostitutes tonight. It'll be great. It'll be fun. And most of the times he would go out with them. But then he would later like make up an excuse. Like, I've got to go water my cat. Like something really dumb. And they'd be like, okay. Like, I know you don't really have an obligation because we all are in the army together. Like, it's not like you have a separate job and you're like, oh, I got to go to work early tomorrow. Like, we all get up at the same time, dude, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there would be some times where he couldn't finesse his way out of it because, like I said, Dennis was really paranoid about people thinking that he was a homosexual. Mm-hmm. And so he would constantly be like, no, I really, like, something came up. Like, I got to go poo. Like, I got to go do this thing. And they'd be like, God, what's wrong with you? And then he'd be like, okay, you know what? Yeah, you're right. Like, let's just get wasted and get some prostitutes, right? He would just be peer pressured. Mm-hmm. And the couple of times that he did have sex with women, he called it overrated. He said it's overrated and depressing. And so at this point, he gets transferred yet again to a different base. Now, this base was in a very dangerous area. So he was actually the chef at a prison. Like, he was a prison cook, right? And one time, he gets kidnapped by a taxi driver on his way to prison to work. So he gets kidnapped. And I think that they knew that he was part of the army, right? So they were like, oh, like, maybe I'll get something out of this. I'm not sure why they kidnapped him, by a taxi driver who beat Dennis up and then put Dennis in the trunk of the taxi car. And so finally, the taxi park somewhere, he opens up the trunk and the taxi driver is looking at Dennis, and Dennis decides to grab the jack handle that's inside the trunk, knock out the taxi driver, and then put the taxi driver in his own taxi trunk. That was the only cool moment in Dennis's life. Yeah, everything else goes downhill from there. But
what happened? He evaded
death. And again, he said that this again made a very complex relationship with death for him.
He killed the driver?
He didn't kill him, but he liked the feeling that he had been knocked unconscious and placed in a trunk.
Oh, he enjoyed it.
Yeah, and then he knocked the taxi driver unconscious and then placed him in a trunk. And now he was getting all confused. Like, there was just a lot going on with death, you know, in his life. He just, it was really weird. So at this particular base, it was unlike any others. He had his own private room. So he didn't have any more dorm roommates. He didn't have to, like, go to the showers at a specific time so that he could masturbate. He could just masturbate on his bed in his own comfort, you know? And that's when what I like to call the phase of masturbation experimentation started happening, which honestly is a very healthy process to go through. Just maybe not in this way, right? So he bought this freestanding mirror, like a mirror that doesn't have to be propped up against a wall, or it was like a long mirror, like a total mirror, right? And he positioned the mirror with his head out of the view so that only his body was in the mirror view, but he could still see the mirror. And then he would masturbate and he would visualize another man instead of him, which is crazy because, like, I would like to say that I go through, like, ups and downs of my self-confidence, but not once was like, you know what, I want to have sex with myself, like, I'm so cool like that. Like, I just think it's really crazy. Maybe I should. But he would visualize another person in his place. So, like, he would be masturbating into the mirror, but he'd be like, oh, that's Jerry, that's Jeffrey Dahmer, you know what I mean? Sorry. But he'd be like, that's Jeffrey, you know, like, he wouldn't be like, that's me and I'm just staring at myself. He'd be like, oh, I'm watching Jeffrey do this to himself.
Yeah, I guess back in the days, there's not a lot of
porn
resources. So.
Yeah. And so he said that at that point, he was able to split his personality, visually speaking. So I don't want to, like, I know that the movie Split made it hard to differentiate between split, I guess, something like that or whatever with, I don't know. Like, I'm not trying to say that he's claiming that he had DID is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. He just said that he could be dominant and passive in the relationship at the same time.
Okay.
You know, so that's, like, kind of his mind process, which is a little interesting, right? Speaking about experimentation that you just really don't need to do, nor should you do, nor do you want to do, let me talk to you about my hair experimentation that I went on a journey for. Literally years ago, I was in the same rut that maybe many of you guys are facing, which is you go to the drugstore, you buy these, you know, hair products, you're like, ooh, this looks like a good shampoo. How do I know? The packaging looks cool. You use it, your hair just looks whatever, okay? It didn't change anything. Sometimes it makes it more dry, sometimes it makes it more oily, and you're just like, really? If you don't love your hair, you need to
leave your current hair care routine back in 2020. We don't need her this year. You need to try Function of Beauty instead. I have been talking about them for years and I have been using them even longer. And my hair, it has never been healthier. Tell them, babe.
It's like a shiny horsetail.
Okay, that's really rude. But like after I blow dry, he's like, wow, it looks like silk.
Shiny horse silk.
Shiny horse silk. Listen, if I told you to use my Function of Beauty formula, it may or may not work for you. And that's because your hair is different from mine. But that's the best part about Function of Beauty is that every single person gets a formula that is customized to their hair. So first you take a quick but very thorough quiz and you tell them a little bit about your hair type and then your hair goals. Like, do you want long hair this year? You want to volumize your hair? You want that oil control this year? From then, the Function of Beauty team will determine the perfect blend of ingredients and they'll bottle up your formula, deliver it to you along with like these really cute seasonal stickers and all of the instructions you need to get that silky glossy hair that you deserve. There are over 54 trillion possible formulations. So when I say it's formulated for you, I'm saying it's formulated for you. Also, every ingredient they use is vegan, cruelty-free. They never use any sulfates or parabens. You can also go completely silicone-free if that's what you like. They have completely personalized formulas for body and skincare as well. So you can customize that too, all at the same time. Go to functionofbeauty.com/rotten to take your quiz and save 20% off your first order. That applies to their full range of customized hair, skin, and their body products. Go to functionofbeauty.com/rotten and let them know that you guys heard about it from us and get 20% off of your order. Again, that is functionofbeauty.com/rotten. So then eventually he starts thinking while he's masturbating. Because like I said, masturbation experimentation. Someone write a book using that title. Honestly, it's a good phrase, okay? So he's like, what should I think about today? What should I think about? And then slowly he starts thinking about the dead soldiers' bodies that he's seen. And that's when you know it's getting alarming. Yeah. Just like dead soldiers. He was like, I've seen that before. And he starts masturbating to the idea of dead soldiers. And then he gets real classical with it. So there was this one painting called The Raft of Medusa. And it was a 19th century oil painting. So like a really fancy, like one of those art history majors probably could tell you 25 million things about this painting, right? And it was an old man holding the body of a limp, nude, naked young boy as like he's also sitting next to another naked boy who's dismembered. And he's just like sitting there and it's supposed to be like poetic and shit. But he was like, you know what? I'm horny. Like, let me masturbate to this. So he would masturbate to like a, I don't know if it was like a print copy of the 19th century oil painting, but he would think about the Raft of Medusa.
Are you serious? See,
that's what I'm saying. Like, super classical. I would almost dare say classy of him to do so, but not really, because like, what? Why not the Mona Lisa or something? Like, that doesn't have...
That's creepy, honey.
I mean, okay, but like, you know what I mean? Like, or like someone just sitting there, like not necessarily dead people. Like, this is supposed to be like an emotional, tumultuous, like you don't really, know that they had some kinky paintings in the 19th century. Like, you could totally find some kinky, kinky stuff. But he was like, no, the Raft of Medusa. Like, why? And so his favorite fantasy later on became a young man who dies in war. So a soldier dies in the war field. He's laying there on the ground. An old man walks up to it and washes the corpse with a rag and then spread eagles the dead soldier's legs and starts performing necrophilia, just having sex with the dead body. That was his favorite fantasy. Which is really crazy, okay? Especially crazy to think that he should probably relate more to the dead soldier that's getting abused than the old man. I don't know who he thought he
Maybe
was.
Maybe he is imagining.
Yeah.
He is the
dead soldier. But either way, he was so into it.
Wow.
So 11 years after being in the army, he finally ends his military service and he moves back home. Now, once he moves home, his mom starts nagging him. She's like, why don't you have a girlfriend? When are you going to give me grandchildren? When are you going to start a family? Come on, Dennis. Time is ticking. Why don't you know any girls? Do you want me to introduce you to someone? You know, my neighbor's got a friend who's got a friend whose daughter might like you. You know, like she was doing all of this and he was like, oh God, this is so annoying. Like, shut up, mom, right? And that's when all of his siblings and he sat down to watch a documentary about gay men. Now, all of his siblings were disgusted by it. They were like, ew, right? They were just like, forking rude. And he started speaking up for the gay men. He was like, what are you talking about? Like, why is that ew? What's wrong with you? Like, who's to say love is not love? Like, why is your love better than their love? I'm getting heated. Okay, you know, who's to say that? Like, why are you grossed out? Why are you grossed out, right? And a fight ensues, and his older brother starts telling his mom, Dennis is gay. because he was like, there's no reason for you to be so caught up and so crazy and wound up about gay men if you're not gay. Mm-hmm. And so pretty much outs Dennis to his own mom. Now, there was no solid proof of this, but his mom was really upset. His mom was like, no, you can't be gay. And so Dennis was like, okay, like, I'm moving out of here. So he never spoke to his brother ever again since that moment. And he would have very sporadic contact with the rest of his family. So he moves out of Scotland and moves into London, right? So to the UK. And he has a brief, about a year of work in the police force in London. During this time, he started visiting a lot of gay pubs and he would have a lot of just like sexual encounters with men. And they were all kind of one night stands. He wanted a lasting relationship, but they were all one night stands. And he said that it was completely soul destroying and he would only lend his body to his partner in search of inner peace. So it was just kind of poetic. I don't know. He like really over dramatized things, but he just really wanted a long term partner. So he eventually leaves the police force and starts working at that job center where he would still work when he gets arrested. So he held this job at the job center for a really long time. He helps unskilled laborers find employment, and everyone said at work that he was just quiet. He was a conscientious employee. His attendance was kind of mediocre, but he worked overtime a lot, and eventually he became an executive officer. Now, during this time, on his off days, what did he like to do? Did he like to go out in search of that long-term relationship he's looking for? Because sometimes you don't find that at a pub. You know, sometimes you find that, go into these matchmakers, maybe try something like that, right? But no, he would spend all of his time putting on makeup to make himself look dead, like blue makeup to make his like skin tint a little bit gray and blue. And he would even like mix up fake blood and like drip it down the side of his mouth. And he would stand in front of the mirror, stare at himself and masturbate to his dead face. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Which is like a really interesting kink. That's when he meets a man by the name of David Gallican. So he was a 20-year-old man who was being threatened outside of a pub that Dennis goes to a lot by these two big dudes. And Dennis was able to get David away from his bullies and was like, listen, David, you look really beat up. You look like you're sweating. You look like you're a little alarmed. Why don't you come back to my place and you can eat and we can drink more? Because, you know, this pub is dangerous. So they go back to Dennis's place and they start eating. They start drinking and they get along really well. That's when Dennis learns that David is unemployed and he's homeless and he's moving from one hostel to another, right? Mm-hmm. And so out of nowhere, when the morning time came around, obviously it's time for David to leave because, you know, it's a one night stand. Like, we're not in a relationship. You should get out of my house, right? Uh-huh. But Dennis just doesn't want him to leave. So he looks at David and goes, hey, you want to move in with me?
What?
And David is looking around at his tiny little apartment and he's like, and Dennis is like, listen, we can get a bigger place. Yeah, it'll be fine. And so obviously David had nothing to lose because right now he was homeless and unemployed. So he was like, yeah, okay. So they end up renting a flat on Melrose Avenue in London. Yeah, it was a nice big ground floor flat. He had used about like £1,000 that his biological dad had left him when his biological dad died recently. So he had used that money to pay like the, I guess like the, what do you call it, security deposit on this place. And it had access to a private garden in the back, which becomes really pertinent to the story. And so they were like, we can keep a dog. And it's pretty cheap because the place needed a lot of renovation. So they're like, okay, let's move in. So within a couple of days of meeting David, David and Dennis get a new flat together and they move in together. Flat is also like an apartment. Because Dennis, I guess, just really didn't want to be alone and David really had nothing to lose. So he's like, whatever, like my name's not on the lease. Let's go.
Did he really love him or like him?
No.
Like David?
I mean, kind of and kind of not. Okay. So they move into the flat. And like I said, it was incredibly cheap because it needed a lot of renovation. The flat itself was big. They also had a private garden in the back. So they're like, okay, we're going to get a dog. Now, the whole plan was that originally Dennis was going to help David find a job because he works at the job center, right? Yeah. But then he was like, wait, maybe not. Maybe David, you should be a stay-at-home dude and you can help fix up the flat, you know, because it was really nasty. So maybe you can do some like work in the back, make the garden livable and shit. And so Dennis really loved being the breadwinner of the house. He liked being able to control David. He felt like David could never leave because he was the one that makes the money and like provides the housing and stuff. And they never called each other their boyfriends, but they just kind of stopped seeing other men. And I don't know if that has to do with the fact that they lived together, so it'd be difficult to bring home other men. Mm-hmm. But they just kind of became somewhat exclusive. Now, Dennis would say that he was sexually attracted to David, but they barely, rarely ever had intercourse.
Really?
Yeah, and everyone's like, well, that's marriage, so get over it, Dennis.
That's true.
They're like, don't be a big weenie. I'm just kidding. And so they get a dog named Bleep. Oh, yeah. You bad Bleep. Uh-huh. They get a dog and they name it Bleep.
Is it a good Bleep?
I mean, I guess so. Bleep, come here. Like, that's such a weird name. Bleep. Mm. Come here, you little good Bleep. Oh, you're a bad Bleep. Within a year of moving in together, they start fighting a lot. So they eventually start sleeping separately in different rooms, and they would bring home different casual partners. So like Dennis would bring home someone, David would bring home someone, and eventually David moved out and Dennis got really, really depressed. He wanted someone to immediately move in and take David's spot, right? But no relationship that he would have with any other men would last more than a few weeks, and no men wanted to move in with him. They were just like, whoa, like I just met you. What are you talking about? And so Dennis started to believe that he was unfit. Like he was like nobody wanted him. Nobody loved him. Nobody wanted to live with him. Like maybe he was just a shitty roommate. Like he was just getting really down in the dumps about it. And so other than his occasional one night stands, he started living a life in just really intense solitude, like 2020 before 2020, you know, type vibe. Then he meets a little boy by the name of Steven. So he saw Steven Holmes outside of the pub that he goes to. Now, Steven was 14 years old, but Dennis claims that he thought that he was at least 17 years old, okay? So Steven's out there trying to buy drinks at this pub, and he fails. Like, the bartender's like, you're literally not of age, so bye. Mm-hmm. And so Dennis hears this, and he's like, hey, why don't you come back to my place? I've got drinks. So mm-hmm. they go back to his place. They start drinking. They start listening to music, and they have a really good time. They even crawl into the same bed together. They fall asleep. Now, in the morning, Dennis wakes up first, and this is kind of like the same experience that he had in the army in Germany. He looks over, and Steven is knocked out cold. Mm-hmm. So that's when he's like, man, I'm just really sad that Steven's going to leave. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so sad to even go to the restroom right now, because if I get up and make noise, Steven's going to wake up. He's going to gather his things, and he's going to be like, well, it was nice to meet you, and then leave. And I don't like that. I don't like that. And he's looking over at Steven, who's asleep. He starts caressing his hair. He starts, you know, touching his face a little bit. And he gets up from the bed, goes into his closet, grabs a necktie. Now he slowly walks back to the bed and slips it under Steven's neck, gets on top of his chest, and pulls as tightly as possible, starts strangling him with a necktie. And he said that Steven's body came alive immediately, and they struggled and struggled. Eventually, they ended up on the floor, and finally, Steven grew limp. Now, Dennis realized that Steven was still not dead. He was just unconscious. So he runs into the kitchen, and Dennis fills up a plastic bucket full of water, and he drowns Steven. Are we seeing all these weird connections here? Drowning, yeah. The unconscious body, just all of it. So he drowns him. There was no more struggle, he said, but he wanted to make sure. So he waited for all the bubbles to stop coming up in the bucket of water. So he really, really drowns him. Then he lifts Steven up. He places him on like a chair in the living room. Now there's water dripping from his hair. And that's when he realizes, oh my God, I don't even remember this guy's name from last night. I was so drunk.
Steven,
yeah. He like completely forgot his name. So he's like, who is this guy? And he said that he was just in complete shock. Like he couldn't believe that he killed someone. He made himself some coffee. He started smoking some cigarettes. He's like, what do I do? What do I do? Right? And that's when his dog Bleep walked over, and the Bleep sniffed the dead guy on the armchair. And so Dennis freaks out and is like, get away, dog. Like, what are you doing? Which is kind of crazy because you just murdered the guy. But like, okay, your dog sniffing him is so crazy, right? And so he starts thinking, what do I do with Steven's body? What do I do? So he takes the necktie off of his neck and then carries him into the bathroom and washes him in the bathtub. And he just said that his body was really limp and floppy. And he would completely dry him with a towel, dried his hair, put him on the bed. And even though there was starting to form some discoloration on the lips and the face, he still felt like it was worth it because now his friend couldn't leave him. Oh, yeah. And he said, in quotes, the beginning of the end of my life as I had known it, I started down the avenue of death, possession of a new kind of flatmate.
New kind of what?
Flatmate, which is a roommate. Oh. He's like, a flatmate? You're my flatmate. Do you get it?
Yeah.
Because I'm flat.
Yeah, wow.
But flat is like apartment. Yeah. Like a possession of a new kind of roommate.
Oh, wow.
He would then go on to have 15 of these types of roommates. So Dennis thought that the corpse was beautiful. He didn't really understand why he killed Steven. He just said that he didn't want him to leave because he had spent Christmas alone and he didn't want to spend New Year alone. Like, that was like his whole thing. Like, I don't want to be alone for New Year's Eve. So then he would get ready for work the next day. He would say goodbye. Like, bye, Steven. I'll be home soon. And then he would come back home. He would eat dinner with him and he'd be like, oh yeah, well, my day at work, let me fucking tell you, a Karen walked in today. And he would just talk to Steven as if Steven was alive. He would also continue to put makeup all over Steven to make him look a little bit more alive, like to hide all of the bruising on his neck. It didn't seem like the discoloration bothered him as much as the bruising on the neck did. So it's like he wanted to see dead people, but didn't want to see the cause of death. So like that's kind of a little bit where he's different from people, I think, like other serial killers. Whereas, like, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer kept, like, skulls and shit and wanted to make a shrine. So he just didn't really, maybe he wasn't as twisted. I'm not sure. So then eventually he ends up going to the hardware store and he buys an electric knife, a pot, and he tries to dismember the body. But he just, like, couldn't do it. Like, he was like, I love this guy, you know? Like, I can't pull him apart. I can't do this. What do I do? So instead, he dresses Steven up in new clothes and he said that he really wanted to have sex with the corpse. Like, he really wanted to. So, you know, Dennis is like, well, I can't have sex with Steven until I shower because that would be rude. That would be rude to have sex with someone when I'm all dirty and sweaty. So I need to go clean myself up. So he goes into the shower. He comes back out, lays down in bed with Steven. And that's when he's like, man, I can't get hard. Like, I can't get an erection. So then he throws Steven off the bed and just like covers him in a sheet and falls asleep on the bed. And then he just like proceeds as normal again, makes dinner, watches TV, talks to the body that's just lying on the ground. And then so finally,
he hasn't done anything to the corpse yet.
So he will never actually penetrate a corpse. He will do something called incurable sex. Exactly, that's the exact word. You can quote me on it. Sex. So it's when you put someone's thighs and you cross the thighs and the penis goes in and out of the thighs that are crossed.
That's what he...
Yeah, so he's
been doing that to Steven.
No, he will only do that to like a few of his victims, but he never did it to Steven.
So what does he do?
Just, he would sometimes sit on them and just masturbate onto them while he looks at them.
Oh, but he never so does
penetrative
weird.
Sex, which is interesting. But what I don't find interesting is later he brings it up as if like, whoa, guys, I know I killed 15 people, but I never penetrated.
I see. Just like,
okay, that's not how it works, Dennis. But so interesting, right?
Very fascinating.
And so finally he was like, okay, well, I need to put Steven somewhere. So he decides to pull up the floorboards in his apartment and he loosens them up. And at this point he's like, okay, I'm going to stick Steven underneath these floorboards, put the floorboards back. But rigor mortis had set in. So obviously he's too stiff to be bent into the floors, to go into the floors. So he just like props him up against the wall and he's just like stiff up against the wall. And he just starts masturbating onto Steven's body. And then the next day, Dennis massaged all of Steven's limbs to like loosen it up and then covered the corpse underneath the floorboard. So, I mean, I think at this point the rigor mortis had passed and he was on the next phase of decomp. But I just thought it was interesting that he was like massaging this dead person like a fucking chiropractor. Now, a week later, he decides to check up on his friend Steven. So a week later, he opens up the floorboards and he's obviously super dirty. Like, not only is he decomposing, but he's like in the dusty ass ground underneath the floorboards. So he drags Steven back into the bathroom, washes Steven, puts Steven back underneath the floorboards, and he uses the same bath water to take a bath.
Oof.
Yeah, what kind of lush bath bomb is that? Oof. Yeah, so he freaking takes a bath in that bath water. And Steven would remain under the floorboards for the next 7.5 months. I don't know. Honestly, I cannot tell you why anyone, his neighbors, or even his colleagues, because the smell of decomposition, I wouldn't know personally, but from what I've heard, it like stays on your clothes. It like sticks on you as a person, you know? Like it's really hard to get rid of that smell. It's like KBBQ. Like that's like the worst comparison I can make. But no matter how many times you shower after Korean barbecue, it's gonna be there for a while. Yeah. It's gonna linger. Like that's how I feel. Like this is explained, but for some reason nobody noticed. Later, Dennis would take out his victims from underneath the floorboards, and he would mask, like, he would do a bonfire in the garden, in the backyard, and he would put some tire, like some rubber, into it to mask the smell of the bodies. And it just, because, you know, the smell of burnt rubber is so strong and so distinct, so he would do that three times. And at, I believe his biggest burn, like his biggest bonfire, had, I want to say, like four or five bodies at once.
Oh my God.
That he had dismembered first. So then immediately afterwards, he meets a man by the name of Andrew Ho. So Andrew was a Hong Kong student who was studying in the UK, and they met at a pub. So Andrew said that he was really interested in trying some bondage. And Dennis is like, yeah, yeah, I got it all at home. Like, I'm really into bondage too. Like, come on over, right? And that's when they get into some bondage play. And all of a sudden, Andrew said that Dennis put a necktie around Andrew's neck and said, "You're playing a dangerous game," and just started choking the shit out of Andrew. And so Andrew was able to get away, go straight to the police station. And the police are just like, "Oh, like lovers quarrel. Like, I'm sorry. It got too kinky. You couldn't handle the heat. Then get out of the kitchen, you know." And they did question Dennis, but he said, "Oh, like we were just doing it." He said he liked it. He said he liked bondage play. So we were doing some bondage play. We were also really drunk. Like both of them were wasted, you know. Mm-hmm. So at that point, Andrew never pressed charges. The police never further investigated Dennis. They just kind of left. Meanwhile, Steven is underneath the floorboards during all of this.
What?
Like dead underneath the floorboards,
what
you know?
What kind of floorboard seals all of that?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They just built different in London, huh? So I just want to talk to you guys about an email that I was writing to our accountant the other day. I was just trying to ask a really dumb question. I don't even remember what it was about, but I remember while I was typing, I really was so tempted to write, "Call an ambulance, but not for me." And then I was like, okay, this is like not appropriate right now. The only reason I knew that, because I have lost my absolute sense of self, is because I use Grammarly. Listen, I am so happy I found Grammarly. Honestly, this is really organic because my fiance actually introduced me to Grammarly because I told him I hate emails. I don't like responding to emails. They give me anxiety because every time I respond, it's like, oh my gosh, what if I spelt something wrong? What if this isn't the tone I need? Like, what if it's not professional enough? And he says, hey, I found out about this app. Just download it on your phone. It's called Grammarly. I downloaded it. Wow. So it helps you have clear, effective communication, and it catches way more than just spelling mistakes. Honestly, I thought going into it, it was just for spelling, but it's not. I have Grammarly Premium, and it gives you real-time feedback and insights on helping you elevate your writing through tone, word choice, clarity, and it helps you not ramble on in your emails. So whether you guys are sending recaps to your team or like to your boss or applying to new jobs, before any of these, give yourself peace of mind with Grammarly. You can improve your writing on all of your favorite sites and apps, whether it's Outlook, Gmail, Twitter, LinkedIn. You know, don't just say it, make a statement. That is what we're going into 2021 with clear, flawless text that's gonna impress everyone. Elevate your writing with 20% off of Grammarly Premium by signing up at grammarly.com/rottenmango. That's 20% off Grammarly Premium at grammarly.com/rottenmango. So this was 2 months after the attempted murder of Andrew, and he runs into a Canadian tourist by the name of Kenneth, and they meet at a bar. So Dennis finds out that Kenneth is a tourist, and he's like, oh my gosh, like that's amazing. Why don't I take you to some London landmarks? And Kenneth is like, you know what? It's my last day in London. I still haven't seen A, B, C, and D. So yeah, let me go with you. So Dennis starts driving him around, showing him around all these crazy landmarks. And then finally, he's like, do you want to go back to my place and like share a meal together? And of course, Kenneth is like really excited. He's like, wow, thank you so much for showing me around. I'd love to go to your place. So they go back to Dennis's place and they start drinking, they start eating, and they're getting along really well. Now, Dennis says he doesn't remember exactly what point in the night that he felt this, but he just got so upset with the fact that Kenneth was flying back to his home country of Canada tomorrow. So he's like, oh no, this isn't good. So Dennis says, hey, you want to listen to my favorite song? Kenneth's like, sure, yeah, what is it? Here, it's better with headphones on. So he gives him a pair of headphones and starts playing that song on like a, well, I don't know what they had in back in the day, like a CD player, a Walkman, I don't know, right? So he starts playing that song, and Dennis comes up behind him, wraps that headphone wire around his neck, and starts choking him. And he actually was able to drag him across the floor while with like that headphone string. Like, these are some crazy strong headphones, okay? And then he eventually started drinking some rum. He sat down next to Kenneth's dead body and put the headphones into his own ears now and started listening to music and just like was hanging out with Kenneth's corpse. So then later he goes and buys a Polaroid camera and he starts taking pictures of Kenneth's dead body in suggestive poses. He washes him. He takes the corpse to bed with him. He even laid Kenneth on top of him, spread eagle, on top of his body while he watched TV for hours. Now, this is a little strange to me because, like, I don't know if you've ever even, like, had a dog on top of you, but it's so uncomfortable. But he just placed Kenneth's dead body on top of him and just watched TV for hours. And then he would place him right underneath the floorboards with Stephen Holmes. He would take him out multiple times in the next couple of days to sit him on the armchair next to him and watch TV together. So he really just enjoyed his company. Kenneth was one of the very few victims where he would cross Kenneth's legs together and penetrate through his thighs, like have sex with his thighs. So, And then 5 months after Kenneth's murder, he meets a 16-year-old by the name of Martin Duffy. Now, Martin was hitchhiking to London without his parents' knowledge because he was 16. And he had spent 4 days just sleeping at the railroad station because he didn't have enough money to go back home. He didn't want to go back home. And it was just kind of like one of those rebellious teen moments. So Dennis sees him sleeping at the train station and he's like, "Hey, you look exhausted. Why don't you come to my place for a hot meal? You could shower. You could sleep on my bed." And of course, Martin, being exhausted, he's hungry, he was like, "Oh wow, you're so nice. Why are you so nice? Yeah, I'll go with you." So he goes with Dennis, falls asleep on his bed. Dennis climbs on top of him and starts strangling him. And again, he's limp, but he's unconscious, but he's still alive. So that's when he drags Martin to his kitchen, fills up the sink with water, and starts drowning him. He also bathed him just like he did his other two victims, and he said that this was the youngest looking body he'd ever seen, which is a little just weird. So then he would kiss him. He would caress him. He would compliment Martin's body to Martin's dead body, I guess. He would just be like, "Wow, you have really nice thighs." Like talking to a dead person. And he would masturbate onto the stomach of his corpse. So then once the signs of decomposition got too bad, he would put them underneath the floorboards. And after this, he started killing with a lot more frequency. And the crazy thing with Dennis Nilsen is that most of his victims haven't been identified. So he had killed 5 more people during this apartment phase, which brings us to a total of 8 people. He had attempted to kill a couple more people. And then only one of those 5 that he had killed during this time was identified so far as David Sutherland. And he was just really, Dennis was having some bizarre behavior. So he would do things where he would like just fall, like just start crying, like in the middle of killing people. Like he would just cry. He would try to resuscitate a victim at one point. Like he tried to bring a victim back to life after he murdered them. And then afterwards, he would stand in front of a mirror and just like spit at his own reflection in the mirror. So, I mean, there seems to be a lot of just like self-hatred going on. Sometimes he would lay next to the dead body and listen to classical music and just like burst into tears. So I don't know. He was just being real dramatic. Like, just don't kill people then, dude. He was just doing the absolute most, okay? So then he starts doing these fire disposals because at this point, the bodies in the floorboards, they're full of insects. They're really, really smelly, especially during the summer months. He said that he would open up the floorboards and he would see maggots crawling out of the eye sockets and the mouths of his dead victims.
Oh, my.
So he tried placing deodorant under the floorboards. He would spray insectant repellent around the flat twice every single day because these maggots, they're not just going to like stay in the body. Jesus. They're just going to be like, "Let me see what else is out there." And he said that that was trying to prevent them from getting near him. So eventually he would have a huge fire with 6 bodies that he dismembered all of the bodies and then placed them behind in his garden, started a barn fire, threw in a rubber tire. And he said at this point, neighborhood kids came and watched this big bonfire. And he thought it was just very symbolic. Yeah.
Holy moly.
And so after the fire burnt down, he went through the ashes with a rake and he was looking for any bone fragments, right? And he sees that a skull was still kind of put together. So he just started smashing it with the rake. And then he just threw away the ashes like he would his normal trash. And then he had three more victims. And then finally, his final victim at his Melrose Avenue ground floor apartment was a man by the name of Malcolm Barlow. So Malcolm was 23 years old and he was slumped against the wall outside like a building, right? So Dennis sees him on his way home and he's like, are you okay? And Malcolm's like, listen, I have epilepsy. And because of my epilepsy, I have to take a lot of medication and it just like makes my legs super weak. So I'm a little dizzy right now. So Dennis is like, oh, what? Why don't you come to my house? I'm like literally live a block away. I'll call you in the ambulance. Call an ambulance. Okay, sorry. And yeah, we can go from there. So Malcolm goes to Dennis's place and they call an ambulance. So the ambulance comes and takes Malcolm away and Dennis did not kill him. So the next day, Malcolm goes to Dennis's house to thank him. So he shows up and he's like, I just wanted to thank you. Like, if it weren't for you, I probably would have like gone into epileptic shock. Like, you're amazing. He had like brought some like little knickknacks, like some food. And so they start eating together. They start drinking together. And Dennis started strangling him and put his body underneath the kitchen sink. So Dennis would claim that this was not a sexual killing, but the fact that he just didn't really like Malcolm and Malcolm was kind of a nuisance is what he said. Like, Malcolm didn't want to leave, so he was just like, oh, like, okay, well, I gotta go, like, I have work early, you know, you should go. And he was just like, oh, well, like, let's have one last drink. And that's what Dennis said. I don't know. Okay, Dennis just said that the dude was getting annoying, so he had to kill him. Yeah,
that is so freaky. And so, he had no interest in him.
Yeah, right? Just like, he put him under the kitchen sink. And so later his landlord comes up to him and is like, hey, I need you to move out. Like, while he's got bodies underneath his floorboards. So the landlord's like, yeah, yeah. You know how you moved in here because it was so cheap because, you know, it needed renovations? Well, I want you to move out so I can renovate the place so I can bring in new people and charge them $50,000 million, you know? And so Dennis was like, well, I don't want to move out. And you can't make me move out because I'm sure there's laws against that. So the landlord was like, how about I pay you £1,000? And Dennis was like, I'll fucking move out when you want me out, you know? And that's when the day before he moves out, he has his third bonfire, his final one, where he dismembers the rest of his victims and puts a bunch of rubber to disguise the smell and just burnt a bonfire in his backyard. And I don't know if it's because I live in California where even just like lighting a candle gets everyone on edge and they're like, whoa, whoa, calm down, you know?
Yeah.
But like, really? You can just have these bonfires in your backyard and just like burn rubber and nobody calls an ambulance? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
But he even said that he was kind of amazed at how little people cared about his bonfires. So I can't be the only one, right?
Yeah.
So that's when he moves into a unit in the Cranley Gardens apartment. That's the one with the drainage issues. So he moves into the attic. Now, here's the weird thing, right? You might think that the attic poses a couple of problems. First of all, it doesn't have access to a private garden to have a bonfire. It's also, there's no floorboards also because you're not on the ground floor. So there's nowhere to store bodies underneath your floors because you would essentially just drop them to the level right below you.
Uh-huh.
So that doesn't make any sense. But Dennis said, yeah, well, that's like the whole point. Dennis was like, I thought that I could stop killing once I moved here because it would be so hard to dispose of bodies and I don't want to kill anyone. That's what he claims. It's a little weird. So during the first 2 months that he moves into this apartment, no men were assaulted when they had went into Dennis's apartment to have sex, to drink, to whatever they did. None of them were ever hurt or assaulted until Dennis's birthday. November 23rd, he invites 19-year-old Paul Knobs to his house and starts strangling him while he was asleep. Now, Paul makes it out alive. Now, Dennis claims the only reason Paul is alive is because Bleep walked into that room at the same exact moment that he was strangling the shit out of Paul Knobs, and Bleep wagged its tail, and for some reason that just like made Dennis stop strangling the human because the dog just like came in and wagged its tail. I don't know, right? Uh-huh. So then Paul wakes up the next morning. He goes into the mirror and he's like, whoa, like why is my neck so red? Like, what's going on, right? And Dennis is like, whoa, you should call an ambulance. Like, you should get that checked out. You look crazy, dude. And so he's like, yeah, okay, well, nice to meet you. I'll see you. Maybe I'll see you one day, right? So he leaves. He goes to the hospital. And the doctor's like, I think someone tried to strangle you. Like, I think someone tried to kill you. And Paul's like, nah. And he just like goes about the rest of his day and he lived. He did not die. And then John Howlett, 23-year-old that Dennis meets at a pub, he decides he's going to come over. They're going to drink. And that's when he starts strangling him. So John Howlett was the first victim in the Cranley Gardens apartment. So at this point, the minute that he strangles John, he's like, oh my God, my friend is coming soon to visit, like in like a day. What am I going to do? Like, it's not a massive apartment. There's really nowhere to hide the body. Like, he didn't really have like a closet that the friend wouldn't go into. It was just like his room, a bathroom that the friend would use, the kitchen that the friend would use. Like, he needed to do something. So he's like, okay, what do I do? So he starts dismembering John's body and starts flushing pieces of his flesh down the toilet, exactly like Jeffrey Dahmer. Okay. So starts flushing his, you know, flesh into the toilet. But then he's like, man, this is taking too long. And the toilet's getting a little slow now, right? Uh-huh. So he's like, what do I do? So he boils a bunch of water, puts his head in there with his hands and his feet so that he can boil the flesh off of those. And then put other parts of him there so that he can make the flesh more, you know, like braised, like tender to flush. A lot more tender than like raw meat. And then he would continue flushing. And then a lot of the bones, like the torso, like these big bones that he couldn't get rid of, he just like put them into plastic bags and put them into his little wardrobe. Just like put them there and was like, this is good. He did sprinkle it with salt. So there's that. I don't know if that was like marinating or seasoning. I don't think it was because he wasn't a cannibal. But he did sprinkle them with salt. I don't know if that was supposed to be like a smell thing. So anyways, his friend comes over, doesn't suspect and a thing, what, and leaves.
After he cooks the body, he sprinkles salt?
Yeah, and then just like puts it into a plastic bag.
Oh.
Yeah. So okay. He tried flushing as much flesh as he could, and then most of the body like still was just in plastic bags because there's only so much flesh that you can fillet off of a person.
I think salt helps air dry process.
Honey!
No, we do like fish, you know, jerky fish. You add some salt and then air dry. Anyways.
So what do you do after? Like what does it make it tender?
I think salt helps it dry.
Process, so not like process. Smelly and moist and stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, God. So then a man by the name of Carl Stoddard. This one's a doozy, okay? So Carl Stoddard is a 21-year-old man who they met at a pub. And Carl was recently depressed because he had just gotten out of a failed relationship. So Dennis is at the pub and he's like, man, there's other fish in the sea. Don't be so caught up about that boyfriend of yours, right? Mm-hmm. So he's like, why don't you come over to my place and we'll finish drinking over there because the bar is about to close. And Carl's like, no, I'm good. And he's like, no. Like, we're not trying to have sex, dude. Like, I get it. Like, I'm not trying to be your freaking... what do you call it?
Rebound.
Your rebound. Like, I'm just trying to like make you feel good. Like, let's just go. So Carl's like, okay, fine. So Carl goes over to Dennis's place and they start drinking. Now Carl falls asleep in a sleeping bag on the ground. Dennis was like, here's a sleeping bag. You know, I don't think you should go home because you're so drunk, right? And right before Carl falls asleep, he remembers Dennis saying, be careful. The zipper on the sleeping bag is a little weird. And he was like, okay, thanks. And then he fell asleep and he ended up being woken up because he felt strangled. He felt like he couldn't breathe. He was like, what's going on, right? He wakes up and he hears Dennis say, stay still. So at this point, I mean, his first immediate thought was, oh shit, like somehow I had gotten the zipper stuck and now I'm suffocating in the sleeping bag and Dennis is trying to free me because he's like, stay still. Like maybe he's trying to unzip it. Like I can see his hands on the zipper of the sleeping bag, right? Uh-huh. So then he falls unconscious again and then he wakes up, but this time his head is being submerged in cold water. He said he felt like he was drowning. Carl even said, no more, please, no more. And then he slowly fell out of consciousness again. And then he slowly awoke up again and he was placed on Dennis's armchair and he realized that Dennis thought he was dead. So he's like, what the fork, right? And then eventually he starts kind of breathing. He was like in and out of consciousness for the next 3 days. Dennis realizes this. And instead of killing him, he like tries to nurse him back to health. Like he starts trying to massage him to increase circulation. He puts him in the bed, places him with blankets, like just tries to feed him, keep him like, well, I guess, you know, fed and make him drink water and stuff. And it was just the strangest thing. Finally, after about 3 days, Carl wakes up and he's like, what the fork happened? And Dennis is like, you don't know? You had this crazy nightmare and you were just like throwing your arms around in the sleeping bag when you were drunk. And somehow you got just tangled up in the zipper of the sleeping bag and you started suffocating in there. So I tried to take you out, but you were unconscious. I was like, oh my God, he lost a lot of air. So then I had to pour cold water all over your face to try to wake you up. And for the past 3 days, I've been nursing you back to health. Dennis then later drove him to a railway station and said, well, I hope to meet you again one day, and just like said bye. Now Carl gets onto the railroad and he like goes back home and he's just so confused. So he goes to the doctor and the doctor's like, I feel like someone tried to kill you. And Carl's like, no. Like I got tangled up in a sleeping bag. And the doctor's like, I think someone tried to kill you. And he's like, no, you don't get it, dude. Like you haven't seen the sleeping bag. Okay. So then he leaves. And for some reason, Carl, his brain suppresses this traumatic experience. Carl literally forgets about it until months later, he's reading a horror novel. And for some reason, all of a sudden, his brain was like, oh my God, I feel like I remember this crazy vivid memory of me like being suffocated in a sleeping bag. And so he tells his family and he's like, did I ever say anything like that? And they're like, no. And he's like, that's so weird. I feel like I was drowned and like in a sleeping bag. God, why don't I remember that? So his family is like, you need to go to a psychiatrist, okay? So they take him to a psychiatrist and all these psychiatrists are telling him, your brain is making up these memories, you know? Maybe you read about it, maybe it's this or that, but we're going to prescribe you some antidepressants. And for the longest time, until the police arrested Dennis for being a serial killer, he did not think that this was real. Everyone told him it was fake memory that his brain created.
Shit that your brain does to...
Yeah.
To protect you, I guess.
And then eventually the police found Carl and was like, hey, are you the guy? Because Dennis told us that there was this one guy who got away. His name was Carl and he was in a sleeping bag and he killed him or tried to. And then he nursed him back to health. And Carl like really lost it from there. So Carl's family still believes, I mean, I too... believes that Carl was a murder victim because even though he survived, there was just a lot. So there was the first thing of survivor's guilt. You know, there was a lot of victims who died in Dennis's apartment. Why didn't Carl? And Carl became so depressed. And there was such a long period of him thinking that he was crazy. Like everyone kept telling him, these are fake memories that you're thinking, right? So he believed that he was crazy. Mm. And so he became so depressed that he would later just... he thought maybe, why didn't Dennis kill me? It would have been better if he did. And then it switched to him being really confused. Is Dennis my murderer or is he my savior because he saved me? Why did he save me? Mm-hmm. And then I believe briefly, allegedly, according to some sources, Carl would actually write to Dennis in jail and would ask about these things and started developing some kind feelings towards Dennis. And that made it even more difficult for Carl because he was just like, what is happening? So then there came Graham Allen, a 27-year-old and the 13th victim, I believe. They met while they were trying to like hail a taxi, and Graham accepted Dennis's offer to have a meal at Dennis's place. And while he was eating an omelet, he started to get strangled, okay? So then Dennis keeps Graham in the bathtub for 3 days, dismembers him, flushes him down, and it's just a whole ordeal, right? He couldn't flush most of it, so he puts a lot of Graham into the bags inside of his closet with the other dude, John. And then his last victim would be Stephen Sinclair, who was 20 years old, who came over for a meal. And he said, oh, Stephen, here I go again. And he strangled him with a necktie and a rope. He boiled his head and his hands and his feet and dismembered and tried to flush his body down the toilet. I found the solution for a lot of problems, okay? This is just one of them. So my sister's about to give birth in like a week or two, okay? It's kind of crazy. I'm about to be an aunt. And ever since my sister got pregnant, I have been hounded with the question, when's yours? And I'm just like, guys, calm down. The one thing that I have that has completely made my mom and my dad stop asking about, hey, when's the time? You're getting older. You're now in your mid-20s. It's going to be your late 20s. Maybe you can't have a kid later on. What you need to do it now. The time is taking. And I said, listen, I know how much time I have because I took my modern fertility test and it has given me so much peace of mind. With modern fertility, you just get a simple finger prick that you can do in the comfort of your house, right? And it unlocks tons of insight into your reproductive health. I'm talking about egg count, your menopause timing, if your hormone levels indicate conditions like thyroid disorders, maybe you have PCOS that you didn't know about. All of these things are good to know whether or not kids are in your future. And I love the fact that it's easy and affordable. With fertility tests, you go to the doctor and it costs over like $1,000, sometimes even more. But with modern fertility, it only costs $159 to get the same exact information. And if you guys go to modernfertility.com/rotten, you can even get $20 off of your test. You get your test in the mail and you literally prick your finger. I'm so scared of pain and blood, but it was painless. Then you mail it back with a prepaid label and you get your personalized results within 10 days. And again, it's still a lot of intense information. So that's why they actually give you a one-on-one fertility nurse to review your results with you and options for your next steps. They just answer all of your questions, and I covered all of my bases. Right now, Modern Fertility is offering you guys $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/raw10. That means your test is going to cost $139 instead of hundreds or possibly even thousands of dollars that it costs at a traditional doctor's office. So get $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/raw10. So then here comes the really dumb part. After all of this is happening, he's having difficulty flushing Steven Sinclair down the toilet. So what does he do? He writes an angry letter to his landlord saying, "Listen, my drains are blocked. The situation is intolerable and you need to fix it. The other residents here are hated too. I already know this. I spoke to the other residents." So the landlord the next day sends someone to go into Dennis's apartment and fix the drainage. And he's like, "Oh, what are you talking about? I'm not the one that wrote that letter. Like, I'm not experiencing any issues. Bye." So the plumber just gets sent away because he was actively in the process of dismembering Steven's body in the kitchen. So there's no way he could come in. So he was just like, "Oh, that wasn't me. Bye." And so that it's just the weirdest thing, right? So then the next day he sees the plumbers downstairs underneath the house going through the piping that night. Remember the first day where the two plumbers were like, "Hey, should we call our boss? It looks like human meat." And that's when Dennis was there, and everyone heard Dennis say, "Man, looks like someone's flushing their Kentucky Fried Chicken down the toilet," which is just like an odd thing to say. So I think he was trying to plant a seed that it was just like fried chicken instead of, I don't know, Steven Sinclair, right? So he's like, "Man, there goes our neighbor again with that KFC. Like, what?"
Yeah.
Like, what? So then now we're back to the beginning of the podcast where he gets caught, he gets arrested, he gets brought in because he says he's killed 15 people. So they send the trash bags in to be analyzed by a pathologist, and they said, "Wow, this guy did some pretty good work," which is not a good thing. Like, he has good knowledge on how to dismember a body cleanly. Inside the bag, there was two dismembered torsos, various internal organs, a human skull that was completely devoid of any flesh because he had boiled it, a severed head, a torso with arms that was attached, but the hands were missing because he had a little thing for boiling hands. He just felt like it was, I don't know, easier to get rid of the hand meat. I guess because the hand is a lot of bone and limbs and not as much flesh. So he needed to boil it so that he could dispose of the bones, right? And Dennis almost immediately starts confessing. Like, he's not trying to hide anything. He was like, "Yeah, also inside my apartment, there's more bags of flesh that you completely missed." And so the police go back and they start going through, and there's like just more heads, more torsos, more flesh in these bags. And he's like, "Oh, by the way, also, I killed about like 12 to 13 men at my former address called 195 Melrose Avenue. So you should totally try going there." And they go there. And like I said, a lot of these people were, you know, killed in the bonfire. Like, he disposed of them. So the police investigated, excavated the backyard of that Melrose Avenue apartment, and they found over 1,000 bone fragments in the garden, like tiny little fragments.
Jeez.
I mean, it was crazy. So then during the interrogation, he kind of said it as if it was like this amazing thing that he was like, "Well, I never had penetrative sex with the victims. Like, what are you talking about? I'm not a disgusting, you know, human. What's wrong with you?" He also said that he threw away any valuables so that they couldn't ID the victim, even expensive watches. He threw it away. He didn't keep it. He's a good person. He was just interested in the company of the boys. So his MO went on something along like this. He would meet someone at a pub. He would invite them over. They would drink. He would then strangle them. A lot of them died via drowning. So it was either strangulation or just knocked unconscious and then drowned. So the cause of death was either or, right? And then he would bathe them. He would shave their chest because he liked like a certain shave on the chest. So he would shave the dead body. He would apply makeup to the neck so that any of the bruising on the strangulated part would go away. And he would dress the victim up and he would just start talking to them. He would typically masturbate while he was standing next to or on top of the dead body, and then he would have the intercrural sex sometimes, which is through the thighs. So when they asked, you know, "I mean, this person's dead, why not just rape them? Why not just, you know, go full on necrophilia?" He said, "Because these people that he killed were too perfect and beautiful for the pathetic ritual of commonplace sex." What
a weird dude.
Yeah, and he said that the dismembering thing was really, really hard. So, you know, like I said, with the Melrose Avenue, he would put them under all the floorboards, and the dismemberment process before he would do bonfires came weeks or even months. You know, with the first victim, it was 7.5 months. They were just left under the floorboards, like just literally decomposing. He said that there were maggots all over the place, but even though he hated it, he would throw up by the sight of the maggots. He still masturbated on them to say goodbye.
To say goodbye.
Yeah, I just don't know how you could even get an erection at that point, but he did. So then he would take them out of the floorboards. He would grab salt to get rid of the maggots, which I don't, that's so gross to me. And then once he got rid of the maggots and the flies, he would vomit while he would dismember them because more maggots would fall out every time he cut into them. And they were just completely filled with maggots. And then when the police asked, like, do you feel remorse? Like, now that you're caught, do you want to like do some damage control and say that you were so sad about what you did? And he said, I wish I could stop, but I just couldn't. I had no other thrill or happiness. I took no pleasure in the act of killing, but I worshipped the art and the act of death. Honestly, he's on something. Like, I think that he's trying so hard to be a poetic person, but I think he's really just like a domer, like just a nasty ass dude. Like, you're just a monster. You're kind of a freak, dude. Like, you're not necessarily this like crazy, just like death. Like, death is an illusion. Like, you're, no, don't try to be Shakespeare right now. You're a serial killer. So while he was being held in jail before the trial, he said that he was innocent till proven guilty. That's the system, right? I'm innocent till I'm proven guilty. So I'm not going to wear my prison uniform. People who wear prison uniforms are guilty people, and I'm innocent till I'm proven guilty. And the police guards were not having it. They were just like, just put on your fucking uniform.
So he was naked?
So he would go, he would just, every time he was in a cell, he would just strip down butt naked, and he'd be like, innocent till proven guilty. And then he would just freaking like helicopter it. Yeah. And then at one point, the prison officers were getting so frustrated with him. And as his act of defiance, he went into his basin, which is like their toilet bowl thing, and he just like grabbed his poop and just started throwing it at the officers. So before he was even convicted for any murders, he was actually convicted of assaulting prison officers, and he would have to spend 56 days in solitary confinement. So the trial, despite confessing in full detail with little remorse to all these murders, he pled not guilty by reason of insanity. So in the UK, they call it like diminished responsibility, just like same thing, right? And there were three psychiatrists who studied him. One of them said he had mental issues and should not be responsible for the murders. Another one said that he had no mental health issues and he was just a murderous ass dude, just like a villain, just a monster. And then another one just like couldn't come to a conclusion.
So what happens then?
So at this point, he stood trial, like the three psychiatrists, they gave their statements, but what really put the hammer on the coffin, the nail on the coffin, you get it, were all of the attempted murders. A lot of them came forward and they testified, including Carl. So he was eventually found guilty and sentenced to life in prison. Yeah. What? 1 month into his prison sentence, he was attacked with a razor and he needed like 89 stitches on his chest and his face. So they placed him in the vulnerable inmate section, which gave him like extra security.
What?
Yeah, in his prison life, he kept really busy. I hate when serial killers do this. Like, I'm all about prison reform, but I hate when serial killers do this. So he started translating books into Braille. I mean, I guess that's kind of nice, but still. And he spent a lot of time reading and writing. He was allowed access to paint and compose music on a keyboard. On a fucking keyboard. A keyboard! Those things are expensive! So in prison, he wrote a 400-page autobiography. Talking about all of this, yeah. I mean, he just really wanted to reach out to all these journalists. It seems like he likes the attention. And then eventually, in May of 2018, he died during surgery. So he had like an aneurysm and they tried to remove a blood clot. And apparently he died in a lot of pain because it's a very painful procedure. But that is the story of Dennis Nilsson and the crazy story of how he got caught. Because, I mean, I feel like when you think serial killers, you think about like how they get caught and it's like all played out like a movie, like this intense moment. But a lot of them are just dumb. Like a lot of them are just like flushing. And then they're like, hey, landlord, something's wrong with my pipes. I'm going to sue you, you know? And it's just like, what? I don't know. So he is considered the British Jeffrey Dahmer, in America at least. And I mean, there are a lot of striking similarities. I mean, just the sheer fact that they started their active, they were active the same year. Jeffrey Dahmer, I think, lasted three more years before he was caught. But, and just like the process, they went through the same dismemberment, flushing in the toilet. They also boiled their victims to make the flush easier. Jeffrey Dahmer was a little bit more meticulous about it. Not meticulous. Meticulous sounds like he's a smart person. He just was a lot more loud about it. So he would literally get an axe and like a sledgehammer. If you guys haven't listened to that podcast, that one's a good one. That sounds really wrong to say. But yeah, there's just so many similarities on this one. And they were just both caught in like some weird ways. Listen to that podcast to see how Jeffrey Dahmer was caught. It's from Polaroids. Yeah, Visco girls are shaking right now. It's caught by Polaroids. So I hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. Let me know. What are your thoughts? And do you really think he just did this all for companionship, or he tried to make up a sob story afterward being like, I was so lonely. I just did them because I love people. And I hope you guys enjoyed, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.